You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a master class in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Carolyn in Vermont. Carolyn, I think you might be my first Vermont write-in, so congrats on that. Hello to all of my friends in Vermont. I don't know what you all call yourselves, Vermontans? I don't know. Anyway, nice to have you. Thanks for emailing in, Carolyn. All right, y'all. So this one is quite an interesting email and question, and I was ready to do a lightning round because I want to get caught up on some emails and questions. But honestly, I felt like I needed to devote an entire episode to this topic alone. And if you know me, you'll understand why as soon as we dive in. But Carolyn is asking about the trend that she's noticing lately in child and adolescent psychotherapy, where therapists are using video games in therapy. She actually linked to a website, Geek Therapeutics, and every therapist on there provides virtual video game-based therapy. They have a Dungeons and Dragons section. They have other video game section, and you book appointments online and you do video game therapy. So I'm quiet because I'm going to bite my tongue. Okay. So I'm going to read parts of her question and then I'm going to share some thoughts. And for those of you that are new to the podcast, first of all, welcome. So glad you're here. You will not find a more amazing group of people than this podcast. So really glad that you found us. If this is one of your earlier episodes that you've listened to, I really do encourage you to start at the beginning and listen in order from the very first episode all the way through. You will really kind of get a foundational training in everything from the first episode on. So if you are a veteran, you know my bent about this, and I just appreciate being given an opportunity to kind of clinically talk about this more than just my opinion. So let me read part of Carolyn's email and then we'll get going. Therapists are claiming that video games are used to build a therapeutic relationship with, quote, difficult to engage clients, end quote, and often use person-centered language, such as stating that the therapeutic use of video games is meeting the client where they are, honoring who they are, or making therapy more inclusive. Sometimes they describe clients experientially learning coping skills in a process that sounds similar to play therapy. Some say these children are not very social, not very verbal, or neurodivergent. Therefore, this is the best way to interact with them. My concerns about increasing total screen time for kids, likely already addicted to video games, have been hand-waved by peers, and it had me feeling judgmental and perhaps out of sync with the times. As a play therapist, I do use board games and card games, which I know some people will see as hypocritical. Not even close, Carolyn. Don't ever let that be something that burdens your brain, because board games and card games are 100% part of a child-centered playroom. I digress. Anyway, however, I am also counseling parents to reduce screen time, yes and amen, and even show them the AACAP recommended limits for screen time by age, yes and amen. Since you wrote a book about reducing screen time for children and are a registered play therapist, I think you can probably offer a balanced and informed perspective. I will try. Please tell me, am I overlooking the clinical value of video games, thus missing an opportunity to better serve some clients, or am I right to be skeptical? Also, just want to add that many schools are also relying on increased screen time with movies, TV, YouTube, Chromebook to teach lesson plans for movement breaks for celebrations as rewards for getting work done. It seems they are also embracing screens as a modern tool for educational purposes. All right, Carolyn, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I couldn't have crafted a more helpful question myself, so I'm really happy and excited to talk about this. Not just because it's a personal rant topic. So I promise I'm going to be neutral. I promise I'm going to be clinical and have some legit things to say, even though y'all know my opinion. So, all right, let me share an overarching thought, and probably not going to be received by some in the therapeutic community as favorable, but this is just the way that I see things. We all can have different views on things. My overarching opinion of this is that this is dilution of what therapy is supposed to be. And I could pretty solidly make the argument that it's rooted in laziness. And I don't mean that to be offensive. I try to be pretty diplomatic and neutral when it comes to colleagues and other models and things like that. I mean, you never question where I stand, but I do try to be respectful that, you know, there are different approaches and different beliefs and different ways to do things. But I think it's pretty solidly clear that if you are going to sit and play a video game with a child, that is not therapy. That's a fun hour. And I would argue it doesn't require a lot of clinical skill. In fact, I don't think it requires any. I'm not saying it can't be worked in, but it does not require any. And I think that falls in the laziness camp. So not only are we diluting therapy and what it's supposed to be, and let's be mindful that children and adolescents, which is the population in question here, Carolyn specifically referenced child and adolescent psychotherapy. So we're talking about children, you know, that are not of age, their brains have not fully developed yet. We still know that the frontal lobe is developing until age 25. I can get into all kinds of neurobiology, but I'm going to try to curb that. The point is, we have children that are not at a place where they have full cognitive, intellectual, rational reasoning. Therefore, to sit and play a video game, that is dilution of what child therapy is supposed to be. Especially from a child-centered model, we understand that kids need to engage emotionally because they feel. They don't think, they feel. So when they feel and when they process and when they play, big things happen for them. Video games are in a totally different track. Because video games require concentration, they require thinking, they require cognitive processing, not to mention all of the things that are going on neurobiologically. If you have not read my book, this is not a plug for you to buy it. This is a plug for you to understand what's going on. And if you don't want to do the research yourself, I did it for you in my book. Look at the addiction experts in the field that are talking about the exact same scans of a drug addict's brain are mirrored in kids that are playing video games. Not to talk about the dopamine, the adrenaline, the cortisol, the pleasure centers that fire. I mean, y'all, I could go on and on and on. And please read the book or do your own research, because it is so harmful what is happening to a child's nervous system. It is so harmful to keep them in fight or flight. It is so harmful, the cortisol levels that are being elevated in kids that are playing video games all the time. Therapy is the antidote to that stuff. The kids that come into our center are there because they're on screens too much. Why in heaven's name would anybody say the answer to what's going on culturally for our kids and the screen addiction epidemic that's going on is more screen time and more video games? Oh my gosh, make it stop. Okay, so that was just my overarching thought. Another, I guess, observation or perspective, I'm not really sure what's the most ideal word there, but I think what I'm hearing a lot in the therapeutic world is everyone's looking for the next innovative thing. What can we do that's innovative? What can we do that really elevates this? And what can we do that expands this? And there's kind of these verbs and adjectives that are being thrown out like, wow, we're really trying to achieve this thing, which the field, you know, I think it's important that the field doesn't stay stagnant. And I think it is important that the field explores new things as a general rule. But one of the things that I've really been thinking a lot about is I truly believe the way forward in our field, especially for those of us that work with children, the way to be the most innovative and the way to be the most forward-thinking and the way to plan for what needs to come next is to go back to the basics. It's to go back to seminal work It's to go back to seminal theoretical model. It's to go back to the foundations upon which our entire field was formed and know that stuff and do it really well and stick to what we know works. Because the more we introduce and the more we dilute and the more we water down and the more we add and subtract and modify and whatever, you know what? We've lost what we're doing. We've lost what works. We've lost what's been empirically validated. So I truly believe in an attempt that therapists have to be very forward-thinking and innovative, they're actually losing the entire premise of therapy. And I think our best bet as child-centered play therapists is to ground ourselves in everything that we can read and learn and know that came from the original texts and works, which is why we're doing the summer school series right now. So I truly believe the way forward is looking back, which I know that's a little bit ironic, I suppose. Okay, so then a couple other thoughts I have. Carolyn, thank you again. Screen addiction is real. When I give talks, one of my most requested topics to present on, I've presented on devices and screen use with kids more than I've presented on any other topic. It's what I'm consistently asked to present on. And I quote news article after news article. I quote medical journal after medical journal. I quote psychological journal after psychological journal. I quote scientific journal after scientific journal. I pull up screen addiction facilities, internet addiction facilities. They're popping up all over the place. No one talks about it. No one knows about it. But there are internet addiction, video game addiction, social media addiction, inpatient residential facilities popping up everywhere in our country. China has completely locked down video game use with their teenagers. There's a video clip that I show in my presentation of a news anchor covering this story. They realized that the Chinese youth were so addicted to video games, and because they're a communist country, they do whatever they want. They have been quoted, the Chinese government has been quoted saying, "We are not going to allow a digital drug to ruin the lives of our youth," end quote. Okay. So when you have a communist country shutting it down and limiting video game play for children to 3 hours a week, let me say that again, 3 hours a week is what Chinese youth are now limited to. Why? Because the CCP knows how dangerous it is. They know it's killing a generation. They actually call it an opioid in the video clip, which is a reference to drugs, which is exactly what it is. It's that addictive. And I mean, I could go on and on, y'all. Like my book has so much information in it, and I'm trying to give you like little snippets so that you have a sense of what's going on. But screen addiction is real. Video game addiction is real. This is why kids can't sit still. This is why every child's being diagnosed with ADHD. This is why kids have through the roof anxiety. This is why kids are suicidal. This is why kids are self-injuring. This is why kids are struggling across the board everywhere, because their poor little brains and their poor little nervous systems cannot handle this. And guess what? The video game companies are hiring the most prominent psychologists, psychiatrists, you name it, even addiction experts, to intentionally make games addictive. This is on purpose. And parents are blind to it. Therapists are blind to it. And I mean, I know that you hear the passion and you hear the boldness. I hope that this enrages you. I hope that you are so annoyed and angry about this that you become the personal advocate to your parents about how much they need to limit their children's screen use. And Carolyn, I'm so glad that you've been advocating for that. All of us should be. It should be in our intake paperwork. It should be something we discuss at every single consultation. This is an epidemic. And when I speak on this topic, I liken it to everyone and their brother was convinced that it was cool to smoke decades ago. The tobacco companies got actors, they got cowboys, they got athletes, they put all of these prominent, well-known figures in their ads talking about how cool it was to smoke. Guess what? The Surgeon General knew even back then how harmful cigarettes were. But the general public wasn't aware of that. They were sold a bill of goods about how cool it was. Now, what do we have? Commercials where the people who've smoked their whole lives now have to put their finger over their tracheotomy because they had to have part of their throat cut out. And now we have them talking on commercials about how they wish they would have never smoked and how awful it has been and how damaging it was. This is what's going to happen 20, 30 years down the road. The future generation is going to look back at the early 2000s, like the 2010 to 2030, and they're going to say, why did someone not stop this? Why did someone let all these kids get addicted to video games like this? Why did they let social media become so prominent for kids? Why did they start giving tablets and phones to two-year-olds in strollers? What were they doing? What were they thinking? Why did someone not stand up and say, no, this is bad. This is dangerous. This is terrible. It falls on us to do it. Okay, a couple more thoughts. It is really interesting to me how when we're in a child-centered playroom, you can tell the kids that are on video games and screens all the time because their play almost always mirrors and copies something from a TV show, from a movie, from a video game. They replicate what they have already been exposed to and what they are really, really deep into. A child that has not been exposed on that level to screens, they will play creatively and imaginatively because their brain is capable of it. Kids that have been on screens too much, they don't even really know. They have to relearn how to play imaginatively and creatively. We see it hinder the child-centered process even when we're trying to do traditional child-centered play therapy. We see it. We've been talking about it on the collective calls. I've been talking about it with my coaching participants. It's this phenomenon that has happened only recently. Never once in my 20-year career, ages ago, did I ever see a kid come in and replicate a video game in the playroom. But it happens pretty regularly now. They replicate YouTube videos they've watched. They replicate movies and TV shows that they're really into. It's hindering our process even when we're doing true child-centered play. So I can't fathom why anyone would say, let's play more video games and call it therapy. How will a child ever know what it feels like to let their subconscious direct them and self-actualize? How will a child ever have the freedom and the space to dive into the work that they need to do if their brain is so consumed with their video game addiction? It's a huge barrier. We're seeing it in the playroom a lot. My final thought is, yes, Carolyn, schools are making it infinitely worse. And I talk about that when I give these presentations and when I speak on this topic. Because the question inevitably is, well, if the Pediatric Association and, you know, if all of these organizations are saying that, you know, by this age, a child should only have this many hours a day, you know, my kid has to do like 4 hours on a tablet or a Chromebook every single day for school. I mean, does that count? Yes. It is total screen time. Total screen time. That means TV shows, movies, YouTube videos, social media, video games, homework, schoolwork, anything related to a screen that counts as screen time. And it's cumulative. So it's not 2 hours on homework and then 2 hours on video games and then 2 hours on TV. Let me just share an alarming statistic. Children 8 to 18 were asked to self-report how much time they spend in front of a screen each day. Children 8 to 18, they self-reported 9 hours a day. An 8-year-old is in third grade. And these are children self-reporting. The numbers are probably a little bit higher because what kid is really truly keeping track of the time that they're in front of a screen? They're reporting 9 hours themselves. If you don't count their sleeping and their eating, they're on a screen every waking minute of their day. It's horrifying. So when schools are complicit in this, and when schools require homework on a device, and they require Chromebooks in the classroom, and they require all of the work to be done online, and they have to take tests online, and they have to watch lectures online, it's only making things worse. So what is the answer? We are not silent. With knowledge, we're called to responsibility. So now that you know, and maybe you knew before, but you have to become an advocate for children's health and safety and well-being. And that means every parent, every consultation, you're monitoring screen use and you're talking about the dangers and you're making sure they're aware. Parents don't know, just like parents didn't know about cigarettes way back in the day. We all know now. And I promise you, 2050 rolls around, everyone's going to say, man, they were a bunch of buffoons back in the 2020s. What were they doing damaging their kids like that? How did they not know? And it's our job to advocate. It's our job to educate. It's our job to do everything we can to prevent this from being what it is. It is truly an epidemic, and it's so scary. And we're very, very strict with our son. We have been since he was 6 years old. He's the reason I wrote the book. If you read the first chapter, you learn all about my story. We can't escape this, but we can't ignore it. So, Carolyn, truly, thank you so much. I knew that I would need an entire episode for that question alone. So thank you so much for writing in. And I hope that you're charged, and I hope that you're ready to continue to fight this fight, because no one else is doing it, and that means that it's our job. So love you all. If you want to reach out to me, I'd love to hear from you. If you want to join the collective and have live Q&A with me twice a week, I'd love to have you on there as well. So that's at ccptcollective.com. If you're interested in trainings, go to childcenteredtraining.com. All kinds of things coming up, y'all. My juggling balls are numerous at this point, but I promise you there's lots and lots of good things coming in the child-centered world. So thanks for being patient with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. You know how much I love you. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.